This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, there's a woodpecker pretty much right outside the window of my office trying to hammer into the walls and build a nest for itself in my house.
Okay. I saw you post about this on the gram earlier.
Yeah. Where? Northern flicker,
yeah.
According to the bird identification app that I just downloaded this morning.
Can confirm that was definitely a picture of a northern flicker. They're all over this area. And one of the things they are known for is pecking into people's houses. I'll just say this. Like, seems like you got yourself a problem. It seems like there's also a potential situation that could open the door to an exciting new hobby for you. Here's Chad, where I ask, have you ever considered getting into falconry? Because I think now is the time for you to get a trained raptor of some kind. Could be a falcon, could be a hawk. I mean, I don't, you know, that part is up to you. That's, you got to look within yourself and be like, what kind of a raptor, what kind of a bird of prey owner am I? But you train it. I've seen these dudes with their videos on the internet. You train it and you just basically give it the command, be like, shh, go get that guy. They take care of, you know, pigeons. They could, I'm sure, could take care of a northern flicker, no problem. Plus, you then get to add, you know, a whole new dimension to your life. Like, you get to be one of those guys with a big ass glove, you know, that the bird perches on, get one of those little like hats that they put on the bird that blocks out its vision. A whole bunch of like new shit for you to get into. I'm excited, frankly.
Oh yeah, no, I'm definitely excited to have a bird living in the walls of my home. Do you think I could get, can I like rent a falconer? Will a falconer come out to my house by the hour and just let his raptor take care of the pests that I have in my yard? Because as you know, it's not just the flicker, because we got pigeons out there too, gang of them. In fact, this whole morning I've been thinking, man, if those pigeons were good for anything, they would use the safety of their numbers and they would drive this northern flicker out of their territory. But no, they don't seem to give a shit. They're just like, yeah, man, drill into the house, whatever. It's cool. We'll just be over here building our terrible nests and pooping all over the yard.
You know that somebody in the CME listening audience is into falconry. You know that that's true. In your heart, you know it. Somebody listening to the sound of our voice right now is just like, oh, man, I could loan you Ezekiah, my own personal bird of prey, and we'll take care of that problem in an afternoon.
I've already gotten some tips. I think it was our guy, Cat Pope, who said, as a temporary stopgap go out there and plug the hole with tinfoil because the birds don't like the reflective nature of the tinfoil. So I did that about an hour ago, and so far, maybe it has worked because the flicker hasn't been out pounding away as he has been, you know, for the last couple of days or whatever. Here's the thing. I'm impressed with the drilling capabilities of the flicker because he's only been out there for 2 days, and he's already got like a golf ball sized hole in the side of the house. He's ready to set up shop out there. So
Jack, you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of years of evolution that have honed that animal into nature's drill bit. Like, of course, that's what he does. That's his whole shit, is pecking holes in things, man. Like, obviously.
That's true.
He's going to be able to do. I mean, I feel like nobody's saying it, but we got to both be thinking it, that at some point you go on down to the sporting goods store and get yourself a pellet gun.
You know what? I can't comment on that specifically because I understand that the flicker is not endangered but protected.
Bullshit. Their numbers are robust in Missoula, Montana. I see them all the time.
Okay.
No one's going to miss one is all I'm saying.
What if he has a family? What I've actually been told to do, and this is entirely unsatisfactory to me. People are saying, the internet says, and I've had some neighbors text me after they saw my Instagram post about this smug little asshole who's out there drilling into the side of my house, that what you're supposed to do is get a birdhouse and put it up in the yard, and it has like, it's wood, and it has like the little hole that the flicker likes. You're supposed to stuff it with wood chips so he can go in there and peck his little life away. And I was like, I want to make the yard less hospitable to the northern flicker, not more.
You know what that is? That's appeasement. That is an appeasement strategy, and I cannot support it. That's
correct.
That's how you end up with the northern flickers invading Poland right there.
I do not negotiate with terrorists, and so this flicker will be lucky. He'll be lucky if I don't run down to Murdoch's and pick myself up a pump pellet gun and spend the rest of the afternoon sitting in a lawn chair sipping moonshine waiting for him to show back up.
There'll be an old man in a flannel shirt and a pair of Wranglers. When you get there, he'll see you shopping for pellet guns, and he'll just be like, got yourself a flicker problem, eh? he has like a New England, like a Maine accent or something for some reason, but he'll just be like, oh, this is the one I'd use. Like,
yeah,
they'll see it coming.
He appeared on a couple episodes of Murder, She Wrote. Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you want even more of the Co-Main Event, you can find Ben Folks and myself all week over on Patreon. Hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board where they're talking fights and a lot of other stuff literally all the time. The UFC channel over on the message board was blowing up this weekend during fight night. You know, one thing that will light the message board on fire is an eye poke. And we had plenty of those over the weekend. And honestly, it was a ton of fun actually to get in there and talk about fights, talk about all this stuff that was happening with a bunch of smart, knowledgeable MMA fans who aren't fascists and, you know, just want to have a good time. If that sounds like something you'd like, you should join the team over at patreon.com/co-main-event. Everybody knows by now we're a completely independent podcast. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or even one of the major MMA websites. We're just two guys talking into microphones, and we've been doing it for over a decade. But the truth is, we can only keep making the show with your support. So if you can spare a few dollars in exchange for a little bit more of your attention, please consider joining the Patreon. Another way you could support the show is by going to comainevent.com and checking out our merchandise shop. We got t-shirts, we got hats, we got hoodies, we got lots more. Stop by and pick up our best-selling Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mug, where we can keep, while we can keep them in stock, get the Dundasso t-shirt or the hoodie. It'd be a great week, actually, to get the Dundasso t-shirt or hoodie, considering what we saw over the weekend. You could get a Bobby Knuckles shirt, get a Volcamania shirt. We got it all over there. Just go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. As always, we are partnering with our friends at Superconductor on the Shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at studiosuperconductor. We got music this week from old school CME fan Kyle Kelly Yonner, who also happens to be a professional drummer. He's got a solo project out. It's an EP of instrumental tracks, mostly drums and synth, and I think it's pretty cool. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can find the rest of the EP at his website, kyleky.com, or follow him on Instagram, at kylekydrums. Three rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, Chris Weidman once again proves that the best base for MMA is cheating. And in round number two, are you ready for the Manon Fiorot era at women's flyweight? If we are, we better learn how to say her name. Fiorot?
Manon.
Nailed it. Number three this week. Round number three this week. Whoop my ass and see what happens. Nate, the train is fun, and this sport needs fun more than almost anything else. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week came to us from Darkwing Duck, who writes, were we too quick to give up on Joaquin Buckley after a handful of losses at middleweight? Dude now has 3 wins in a row at 170 and looks like he could be a bit of a problem. This was the co-main, Ben. Joaquin Buckley goes out there. He defeats Vicente Luque by second round TKO, albeit a bit of a slumping version of Vicente Luque at this point. He's lost now 3 of his last 4, though he did come into this fight on the heels of a unanimous win over Rafael Dos Anjos. I think it is possible that, yes, maybe we did. Maybe we did fall victim to the thing that we think in this sport where a guy has a couple of losses and we think, well, we've seen the ceiling. We've seen the ceiling for a guy like Joaquin Buckley, and maybe it's not championship level. We thought perhaps the one highlight of Joaquin Buckley's career would be that weird spinning mule kick knockout that he used to KO Impa Kasangane years ago. Now we thought one hit wonder is maybe what we thought about Joaquin Buckley. And now here he is, welterweight division, looking large and in charge, 3 in a row, TKOs Vicente Luque. I mean, he does seem like he has breathed a little bit of new life into his career and I think fostered a little bit more of attention because, you know, he gets on the mic after it's over and he's compelling there as well.
You know, you mentioned that spinning kick against Impa Kasangane and that being years ago, like 3.5 years ago, basically. He's fought 10 times in the UFC since then.
Yeah.
Which kind of blows my mind, because that kick both seems like a long-ass time ago, since it was sort of pandemic-era UFC, but also not that long ago. And he's had, like, what is, for many people, way more than their UFC career than they ever get, just in the time since then. Did you see him getting on Twitter and being a little bit of a silly little guy?
Oh, no, today? I missed that. I love some SLG energy. What was he doing?
I don't know if you're going to love this one. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
All right. Dang.
You know what day it is today.
Yeah. No, I do. I do. Yeah. God damn it. See, yeah. I haven't been reading a bunch of the internet today because I do, in fact, know what day it is.
Well, see, he gets on there and he's like, you know, I got this win over Vicente Luque on Saturday, but I think he threw the fight. Because I saw him afterwards with James Krause, and like James Krause handed him a ticket or something telling him good job. And I was like, oh, okay. Which I think we all are going to realize what you're doing. Well, it's the MMA community. Not everybody is going to realize that you were being a silly little guy on April Fool's Day. Some people are probably going to take that at least semi-seriously, which is a serious, serious accusation, man, to be like saying this guy is in league with this dude who, if James Krause tried to show his face at a UFC event in Atlantic City, they'd probably have his picture taped up on the wall just don't allow this man in, especially somewhere like Atlantic City, you'd think.
You'd like to think that at least he checked with Vicente Luque before he posted that, where he was like, hey, man, would you be okay with me connecting you with this other group of guys who have been banned for life from this company and sport?
And you think Vicente Luque was like, yeah, go for it, bro.
Yeah, bro. It's funny. That's a funny tweet, he probably would have said.
He posted this video of him saying all this stuff. And it's just like, first of all, I'm once again trying to make the point to all MMA fighters and people in the MMA community, the way the ideal April Fool's joke should work is that when we find out it's a joke, we feel, first of all, a sense of relief and not disappointment, but also we feel like this has been harmless. No one has been harmed at all. It's fine. Whether we believed it for a little second or not, it doesn't matter. It's all just in good fun. And if you are going out there and you're saying, like, my opponent through this fight committed a potentially career-ending ethical lapse in order to enrich himself by failing to try his best in our fight, that's not harmless. If people believe that, that's not harmless. The other thing you don't want to do as an MMA fighter is go out there and do the old, I'm retiring, hanging up the gloves, so long, thanks for the cheese, April Fool's joke, because guaranteed, some people will be like, good decision, bro, it was time. Like, glad to see that you're not going to be one of these guys hanging on too long in the sport, and you're going to get your feelings hurt. You're going to make yourself sad when you see that. So,
yeah,
there are my April Fool's Day lessons for the MMA community.
Just wanted to make a note to say that if you thought Impa Kasangane's lasting contribution to the culture would be getting kicked in the face by Joaquin Buckley, that dude washed up in PFL last year, 2023. All he did was win 5 fights in a row and win the 2023 PFL light heavyweight tournament. And then he took Johnny Eblen to the brink in February this year in the middleweight title fight over there at the Bellator PFL crossover event. So a couple of guys who have done well for themselves following that one high profile fight.
Yeah.
Next question this week comes to us from Christian Raider, who writes, Andre Petroski decided to control alt delete himself during his fight Saturday night. Knocking yourself out during a takedown attempt is definitely an interesting way to screw up my parlay. Have you two ever seen a fighter knock themselves out mid fight before? Well, Christian, yes, we have. You've been around this sport long enough, you'll see somebody knock themselves out during a takedown. This was, I will say though, this was a weird one.
Yeah.
Because Andre Petrovsky essentially, it appeared like rocked himself, bouncing his own head off the hip of Jacob Malcone in this fight, and then stumbled around a little bit, and then, oh man, he just got kicked right in his ribs.
Yeah.
And that seemed to, whatever happened during that, whether it was the liver or like a floating rib, he was in pain after this thing was over.
Can I tell you something? I love when I see somebody do the kick to the body of a downed opponent, because you see him running up on him, the guy's down there, and you look like, oh no, don't soccer kick him. Don't do the thing. You could get yourself disqualified, and then kicking him to the body. And you're like, that is the thinking man's brutality right there. A way to take advantage of that position. You're right, though. We have seen some people knock themselves out before. Just, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody do it like bang their head against the opponent's hip that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely can get you. Like, a hip bone can be sharp. You come in there at the wrong angle and you're just surprised by it. The most famous example of knocking yourself out with a takedown attempt, I think, has got to go to Matt Lindland.
Yeah, Falonico Vitale, UFC 43. Matt Lindland went for like a suplex in that fight and bounced his own head off the canvas.
Well, it was like he suplexed Nico Vitale right onto his own head, essentially, and smashed his own head between Nico's body and the mat. And was just done like dinner, even though he was doing his stuff. He got to do his stuff and still lost.
Yeah. Not only were there a lot of people doing weird stuff at this UFC fight night over the weekend, but they were inventing new ways to do it, which is something that we'll talk about a little bit more in the Chris Weidman round coming up. Next question this week comes to us from Derek Carlisle, who writes, something like 50 million people watched Roadhouse on Prime. Regardless of what you feel about Connor's performance, do you think that he was a big part of people's curiosity to watch the movie? If so, does that actually mean maybe there actually are a bunch of movies that could be made around him? Discourse. Roadhouse, which we just did a podcast about over on the Patreon page on our Doing the Damn Thing podcast. We had the big homie Fernanda Prates come on and talk a little Roadhouse with us. As she said, as we recorded, she watched it twice to prepare for that podcast. So she gets the MVP award on that one. Honestly, I do feel like Conor McGregor was probably one of the main drivers for people to go out and watch the Roadhouse reboot on Prime. At least, I think one thing that we can say in terms of viewership numbers, even if it doesn't necessarily apply to the actual movie itself, is that it didn't hurt to have him there, right? Like, probably a certain amount of people watched because it was the Roadhouse reboot. Probably a certain amount of people watched because they're big Jake Gyllenhaal fans. Probably a certain amount of people watched because it was quote-unquote free for them right there on their streaming service that they were already paying for. And then probably a bunch of MMA people tuned in to watch Conor McGregor. So, yeah, I do think he was a driver.
Yeah, I'm sure he was part of it because you just mentioned all the other reasons that somebody might potentially watch this. And I don't know if any one of them is responsible for that kind of viewership numbers, but I also think a big part of the Conor McGregor appeal, because people know him outside the MMA bubble. It's not just MMA people who know who Conor McGregor is. He might be the one fighter that anybody knows outside of it, but there is going to be a curiosity about that when you hear, okay, we're doing a Roadhouse reboot. Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. Those two things right away tell you, like, okay, this is a real movie. This is a big-time movie. It matters. And then Conor McGregor is going to be in it as a significant role opposite Jake Gyllenhaal. And you go, okay, I wonder if that is interesting or terrible. Let me find out. And then the other piece of the puzzle is, in fact, it is free on a streaming service that a lot of us already have. So the question of, does this mean that there are a lot of future roles out there for Conor McGregor? Well, I don't know. I mean, certainly I'm sure some people out there are like, okay, I have an idea for a movie around this guy now after having seen it. But also there's going to be people being like, my curiosity is satisfied. I saw what I came to see. I got it now. And it's also a question of, are you going to try to get me to go to a movie theater to see a movie Conor McGregor's in now? Or are you going to try to get me to watch it on a streaming service I already have? Because those are different things. And I also know that some people seem to come away from this one feeling like Conor McGregor's performance, while not bad for a guy who is not an actor doing his first movie, was perhaps a little bit one note. You know what I mean? It wasn't exactly a ton of acting range being shown by Conor McGregor here.
Yeah, my feelings are it was terrible. It was the worst thing about the movie. It was so much worse than I even thought it was going to be. All he did, I'm sure you were sent the Instagram video of the guy making fun of Conor McGregor's performance.
Yeah.
Where all he does is walk around having imaginary lat syndrome and like chuckle to himself as he's walking somewhere. But I'll say this. I will watch Conor McGregor in as many as one more movies because I would like to see if he is able to do something else. And maybe this was a quirk of the character that he was trying to portray in Roadhouse, that he acted like that all the time. So, yeah, man, bring on, you know, Henry VIII, the remake starring Conor McGregor. I'll watch that and then we'll see if he actually does have any acting chops.
Yeah.
Next question this week comes to us from Brandon Boyd, who asks, Igor Severino revealed that he and his family have received death threats after his fight with Andre Lima. So let's recap. Didn't get paid. He got cut from the UFC. He now is receiving death threats. Have you ever seen another fighter take a bigger hit than Severino? And is the penalty and the criticism a bit too harsh? We talked about this over on the... Did we talk about this on the proper last week?
No, we talked about it on... Well, we talked about it mainly on the Power Hour because by then is when we had heard that story. I believe it was from Nolan King on MMA Junkie, where he talks to Severino, who basically tells us that he doesn't remember anything about this, that he doesn't remember doing this, that he felt like he got hit with a hard elbow and then was on autopilot after that and was sort of like, I don't know why I would do that either, you guys. And I can't deny that I did it, but I don't remember doing it. And then it also laid out how bad the response has been afterwards, like the people sending death threats to his family and stuff. I do feel bad for him. And I do feel like, especially, I mean, the question of whether the penalty in terms of like not getting paid and being cut by the UFC, was that too harsh? I don't know. I mean, that stuff seems like, even if we believe you didn't mean to, you're not in your right mind because you had just been hit with a hard shot, even then I feel like that's what kind of has to happen. Like, I don't know if he should be banned for life from the UFC, but like a fighter at that level, at that point in his career, something like that happens, it's reasonable for them to be like, you're cut, go make a name somewhere else, prove to us that this is not a pattern of behavior, this is one weird thing that happened, and we'll consider it. And that the athletic commission similarly would be like, you can't bite people, and then be like, where's my money? That just isn't going to work. So that part, fine. If you're sending death threats to anybody over anything that happens in a cage fight that you were not at all personally involved in, then what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, even if you did it on purpose, you shouldn't be bothering that man's family over it. I mean, just be mad at home, you know, talk shit about him on Twitter. Like, that's all you need to do. So that part, yeah, obviously too harsh, but I did feel my thinking on the situation changed because hearing that explanation from him, I felt like it was believable because the thing we were saying about it when we first talked about it right after the fight was, I don't see why you'd bite a guy in that situation. It wasn't a desperate trying to get out of a submission thing. Didn't look like he was panicked or exhausted. It just seemed like a competitive fight ongoing, and he bit him and bit him in a weird place and like in a way that's not going to do anything really except draw attention to the fact that you bit him and get you in trouble. And so it just seemed so bizarre. We were asking that question, why would you do it? And his answer, because I took a hard shot to the head and I didn't know what I was doing. That honestly makes sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like cutting him and well, I don't know about withholding his pay, but cutting him was certainly justified in this situation. But I would hope, I mean, this, we talked about this when we, you know, last week when we talked about it, this guy's 20 years old. He's mm-hmm. one of the youngest fighters on the UFC roster. He turns 21 next month. So he's a very young fighter. He was undefeated heading into this fight against Andre Lima. And so, you know, while I do think that it was okay to cut this guy after a foul like this, which is one of the worst that we've ever seen, I would like to think that he's not banned for life. That maybe if he goes out there and puts together a string of victories where, as you said, he shows that this is not necessarily part of his character, a thing that was like a one-time anomaly, maybe he gets the opportunity to come back. You'd hate to think that this kind of thing just wrecks the guy's entire career at such a young age. And I wouldn't just limit it to a cage fight that you have nothing to do with. Don't send death threats to anyone's family for any reason.
Okay. What if...
See, you're trying to think of one now. You're sitting, you're staring off into space, what trying if, to think of a scenario where it would be okay to send death threats to someone's family.
What if I loaned them my Falcon for the purposes of getting rid of a Northern Flicker and they did not return it?
I'm not even sending death threats to the family of the Northern Flicker himself. I just want to kill him. He's the only one that I want taken care of. I'm going to leave.
You're on record now. Alone. See, you just messed up. That Northern Flicker turns up dead. By any means, you're the prime suspect.
His body's never turning up. I'm going to dump him out, you know, by the Meadowlands in New Jersey. No one will ever find him. Let's see here. Last question this week comes to us from Eric in Toronto, who asked, when I read on MMA Fighting that Tyron Woodley and Luke Rockhold are coaching a Russian knockoff of The Ultimate Fighter, complete with Russian knockoff Reebok fight kits, my first thought was, are you fucking kidding me? But then another thought danced through my mind. Would you rather watch this or the actual Tough? I did not know this. I missed this story. But if you told me that two retired MMA fighters who had some success were then going to get paid some money to coach a knockoff version of The Ultimate Fighter from Russia or somewhere else, I would believe you. That sounds like a thing that would happen. And so to find out that maybe Tyron Woodley and Luke Rockhold are doing it is totally believable to me.
That is that whole thing. I mean, I haven't heard anything about this either, and that is very bizarre. It also makes me wonder, I feel like I'm going to answer my own question, but do these guys not read the news? Like, you get offered, like, hey, you want to come to Russia right now and, like, make a knockoff of the Ultimate Fighter? And you go, sure, I haven't heard anything bad about Russia in the news at all. Let me just go over there. Spend a couple months in a warehouse coaching some guys who I need an interpreter to talk to, probably. Yeah, I see no problem with that at all. Let's go. Let's do it, brother.
Can't wait to watch. All right, that's going to do it this week for listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, though, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, Ben, Chris Weidman was desperate for a win on Saturday. It had been quite a while for him. Obviously, we remember the terrible leg break against Uriah Hall back in April of 2021 that took such a long time to get back from. Then he returns against Brad Tavares last August at UFC 292, loses that unanimous decision. So he came into this fight with Bruno Silva, pretty much with his back up against the wall. And admitted that leading up to the fight, saying that he knew that he didn't have much time left in this sport, that he had felt better in this training camp, that he had felt in previous training camps, but also sort of saying, you know, if things don't go well for me this weekend, you know, this could be it. I could be taking the gloves off in Atlantic City, the same place that I started my career. Then he goes out there on Saturday night and he does get that victory. And in the wake of it, celebrates very much like a man who needed that victory so badly. And yet, it was fucking weird. Especially because the end comes in the third round after not just an eye poke, and there had been several fouls in this fight, not just an eye poke from Chris Weidman, but a double eye poke during the same combination where he poked the opposite eyes of his opponent with opposite hands. He threw a 1-2 combo, both of which included eye pokes, to Bruno Silva that forced the end of this thing. And so Chris Weidman gets the win. There's a lot to unpack here, a lot to talk about in terms of how the foul was handled, the version of win that he got, what should happen, what's up with Bruno Silva, what are the implications for Chris Weidman's ongoing career. But have you ever seen a double eye poke with, you know, not the Three Stooges finger style, but a guy actually using both hands to poke both eyes in the single punching combination?
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a lot of finger damage to the eye for one fight and for a finishing sequence. What do you make of Chris Weidman's, I don't want to say even explanation, but sort of his take on it afterwards, where his comment basically that, like, hey, you know, we're in there, we're throwing punches at each other, even if you get poked in the eye a little bit here and there multiple times in the fight, you can't turn away and fall down like that and rely on the referee to sort of jump in and call timeout. Like, if you react that way, you are inviting the stoppage.
Some MMA fighter shit, right? That's some classic MMA fighter shit. you know, Chris Weidman, like I said, he needed this one, man. So if he takes this win and puts it in his back pocket and continues on in his career, feeling like he showed enough to himself and to others that he can still go for another fight or two, I suppose that's fine for him. But that's easy to say. It's easy to stand there after the fight is over and say, you can't fall down like that. You're asking to get the fight stopped after, you know, when you're not the one. When you're not the one who gets the double eye poke after already having been poked in the eye a couple of times in this fight, then getting the double eye poke within a matter of seconds from each other. And honestly, though, the honest thing is, Chris Weidman didn't do this on purpose, right? It was probably two inadvertent eye pokes on the same punching combination. I don't think I really fault Bruno Silva for how he reacted either. The real fault here lies in how we police the fouls in this goddamn sport, man. Because, you know, first you call it a TKO, even though you look at the replay and it's pretty clear that the left hook that Chris Weidman lands right after those eye pokes didn't really even connect, that Silva goes down because of the eye pokes. And then you go from the TKO to the unanimous decision win because the fight had crossed the threshold where, you know, if the fight gets stopped because of a unforeseen circumstance, then you go to the scorecards.
Yeah.
And Chris Weidman was ahead, so he wins a unanimous decision. None of that makes sense in the aftermath of a situation where one guy so obviously committed two blatant fouls, you know, within a millisecond of each other. Like, none of that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I don't think Chris Weidman did it on purpose. He did have his fingers out pretty much the entire fight, though.
Right. And there's a lot of that. Like that, I mean, look, when I say he didn't do it on purpose, I mean he didn't, you know, he probably didn't necessarily mean to stick his fingers in Bruno Silva's eyes during that specific combo. But it's clear that sport-wide, people know that nothing bad is going to happen to you if that's how you fight, right? If you reach those fingers out to parry punches or, you know, keep the distance, gauge the distance, whatever it is, you might as well. Because if one of those fingers accidentally goes in the other guy's eye, the effect will be entirely negative for him and probably not negative at all for you unless you do it a couple of times in a really, really blatant way. So I think not Chris Weidman's doing that. Sure, a lot of guys are doing that because I'm sure they're telling each other in the gym, you might as well, right?
Yeah. No real consequences to it. Okay, the thing that I think is interesting, John McCarthy, talking about this and about how the rules were applied here, I'm reading this story, I believe it was probably originally an MMA Junkie story, I'm seeing it on Yahoo Sports, and it's John McCarthy sort of like talking on his Weighing In podcast, talking about how this all went down and how this is, in his view, sort of the correct outcome from the officials, because he says, I don't think Gary, meaning referee Gary Copeland, saw the eye pokes, so that was understandable. He makes the call of stopping the fight. Once he makes the call of stopping the fight and they look at the tape, you can see that he did get poked in the eye. They need to have the judges score whatever part of the third round they've seen, who won that round. You already have two rounds that have been judged. This needed to go to a technical decision. It's not a unanimous decision victory. It's a technical decision victory for Chris Weidman. Chris had won the first two rounds. If you're going to say the third round, I think Chris was winning that one for the most part too. So I knew Chris was going to win the fight. But that way, it's not on the fact that a foul occurred and the referee made a decision to stop it without seeing the foul. Now the commission is saying, okay, we see the foul. This is what we do. Based upon the fact that the fight had entered the third round, you could go to a technical decision. If the same thing had happened in the second round, it would have ended up being a no contest. You would not have had a technical decision because they can only go to that if the fight enters the third round. I understand how this, by the letter of the law, reads as a just and by the book application of the MMA rules.
Sure.
And it is also insane.
Right. Yeah. Because I'm not saying anybody handled it incorrectly. I think they did handle it by the letter of the law there in Atlantic City. But that's just a stupid way for the rules to work like that. That's insane.
Especially because if you're saying not only did he commit several fouls throughout the fight, it was those same fouls committed later in the fight that brought an end to the fight. And so what do we do there? Well, we go to the scorecards, which reflect no foul having ever taken place. There's no deduction of any kind on the scorecards. So we're just, all right, you cheated to bring about an end to the fight. It was a breach of the rules that brought this end to the fight. Let's go to the scorecards that act as if no breach of the rules happened at all. If you're Bruno Silva, that would drive you insane, right?
Yeah, and clearly it did. Like, he was kind of losing his mind out there, and I don't blame him, and he's been angry in the aftermath, and I don't blame him. But this is another one of those circumstances where it is very, very unlikely that anything else will happen to change the outcome of this fight, because once the athletic commission starts admitting fault, once it starts being like, oh yeah, maybe that isn't the right way for things to work, maybe it should be a no contest, then you open a whole new Pandora's box there with issues that have to be resolved. But what did you think about Chris Weidman's performance up to that point? Because as he said to himself and publicly, he felt like he needed to show that he could still go out there and do it. I found it to be a very weird fight in that I thought by turns, Chris Weidman looked much improved from where we had seen him most recently in fights. And by turns, he also looked like he was about to get horribly knocked out. Like, I was kind of waiting for that. I was kind of waiting for Chris Weidman to get horribly knocked out. And then, as it turned out, we didn't go the whole distance. So what'd you think? What'd you think of the performance?
I thought, honestly, for the most part, overall, I thought he looked pretty good. Like, he looked better than we've seen him look lately. And just, especially in terms of just like the movement and stuff that we're seeing, like he did not seem quite as like stiff or as aging, I guess, as we had seen him in like that Brad Tavares fight. And some of that, I'm sure, was getting kicked in the leg a whole bunch when you come back from leg injury and maybe you're not moving around the cage quite as well. But I thought, like, as a whole, he looked better than I expected. When I first saw like the way he was coming out in the first round, I kind of thought like, well, okay, this looks like a version of Chris Weidman that could win this fight. I feel like the way this one went, he's not going to get a whole lot of credit for it.
No.
You know, nobody's exactly talked about how Chris Weidman's back. That puts him in a weird spot, especially since he was already saying they didn't know him exactly how many more of these he had in him.
Yeah, well, he can't retire now, right?
No,
he
can't retire. You definitely can't retire now.
Right? We were talking about the old the catch-22 of the MMA fighter of losing one, and you say to yourself, oh, I can't go out like that. And then you win one, and you think, well, I still got it. I can keep going. I got one more. This is a third category where something so weird happens, whether or not Chris Weidman is going to publicly admit it or not. I think probably deep down in the bowels of his heart, he probably knows that this was a weird one, that the outcome was very strange. And so now you got to come back and do another one now, right? You can't walk away on the heels of a technical decision victory after two eye pokes. That's just, if you didn't like the outcome before, you're not going to like this one much better.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, he got to have a moment a little bit in Atlantic City, like jumping out of the cage and afterwards kind of celebrating with people. You got to have that moment in the moment. And then when we start seeing the replays, maybe we feel a little differently about it.
Did want to get to this question from Josh Montgomery over on Patreon, which is about the gloves. He says, since the UFC is obviously not going to do anything about it, should state athletic commissions start mandating changes to a new style glove? Maybe they can beta test them on the early prelim cards on the regional scene. We also saw Justin Gaethje came out and tweeted something on fight night that the UFC wasn't going to change the quote unquote shitty gloves. So this is a problem we've known has existed for a while. You have other styles of gloves that don't seem to produce quite as many eye pokes as the ones that we wear in most American MMA federations now, including the UFC. But like, honestly, I feel like we're getting to the point. And I don't know if the UFC has some kind of a financial arrangement with whoever makes their gloves and they got the UFC logo on there and all this other stuff. But I do feel like we're getting to the point where we got to try something else. Because, this happens so much, and especially in this case, alters or, pushes the outcome of a fight in one direction or another. We got to try something else at some point.
Yeah, It seems like it was... There are people who are fans of the sport today who probably weren't around back when this was Joe Rogan's favorite soapbox to get up on, talking about how we got to change the glove design, you know? Like, that was his thing for a long, long time, anytime this stuff would happen. Wherever he was on Saturday night, I'm sure he was talking to whoever was nearby about how we got to change the glove design. And we are the Ned Flanders parents clip from The Simpsons, where we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas, you know?
All right, well, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, and then we will move on to round number two. Ben, you brought him up earlier, so I'll just say we hadn't heard from James Krause. Hadn't heard from Jimmy Krause in a while until this week. He pops back up via Facebook post where he gleefully declares that he is over $5 million in debt and he doesn't lose a second of sleep over it because he said he learned a few things along the way. Followed by a bullet point list of why it's actually not a bad thing to be $5 million in debt. Sort of a, I'm not upset, I'm laughing kind of a post about this, about being in debt. And then you get to the bottom and it says, one of the many topics to discuss in my real estate coaching group. If I can help you in any way, shoot me a DM. Are you fucking kidding me? Under no circumstances should you DM James Krause about any kind of business arrangement. Most pointedly, most specifically, any manner of financial advice. Do not do that. Are you fucking kidding me?
If it's not actually a bad thing to be $5 million in debt, does that mean that I'm fucking up by not being $5 million in debt?
Yeah. Yeah, bro, you fucked up. You're not embracing the grind when it comes to amassing huge amounts of debt.
It's not too late, is it? I hope I can still get in there.
The good thing is it's never too late to start amassing huge amounts of debt.
Well, Chad, are you fucking kidding me? You will no doubt recall when the UFC banned flags during fighter walkouts and in the corner before fights. Then you will no doubt recall when the UFC reversed that ban and Dana White acted like it had been somebody else's idea. When he said, if flags hurt your feelings too fucking bad, we're bringing the flags back. And we all went, we didn't ask for that ban. That was your guys' idea. Well, you know, the UFC, they don't do anything woke around there. They respect freedom of speech, brother. You can walk out with your flags now. Except for the big homie, Dennis Bazukia. Sure, I'm nailing the pronunciation on that one. He was going to walk out with his Albanian flag. And he says, quote, I'm blessed to be representing Albania, and it's crazy. Right before I was about to walk out, they, meaning the UFC, came and told me I can't walk out with my flag because it had gold trim on it.
What?
Because it had gold trim on it.
What does that have to do with
it? Because it had gold trim on it. I don't know.
Is this a we don't believe you type situation? The gold trim? Like, what?
Are you fucking kidding me? Just what is the deal with the flags?
Yeah. Gold trim.
And also, like, we got to figure that out right before he's going to walk out, whether he's going to walk out with the flag or not. He said his response was, I was like, man, you're going to get me crucified by the Albanian people, which I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily... The case there, but are you fucking kidding me? Can we just decide what we're doing with the flags? Can we just, I don't even care which way it goes at this point. Just either we're doing it and damn the woke mob who would try to stop us, or, you know, we're still messing with people about the flags, and sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't, and the UFC is going to make this decision. Are you fucking kidding me? How are we still talking about this?
Gold trim.
It had gold trim on it, Chad.
What? Anyway, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two. We'll be right back.
Well, Chad, Minot Fureau nailed it. Went out there in the main event, got herself pretty much clean sweep across the scorecards over Erin Blanchfield. Has now not lost a professional fight since her debut, a split decision loss against Leah McCourt in Cage Warriors back in 2018. And since joining the UFC in 2021, she has now won, I believe, 7 in a row. Yet, I come away from this fight where I watch her, you know, a solid performance. Can't argue with the decision. She won every round there against Erin Blanchfield. And I don't exactly feel like my heart's on fire to see Minot Fureau challenge for the title in the women's flyweight division. I also, though, feel like, man, you maybe could actually get pretty far in this division just being a big, strong hoss of a lady.
Yeah.
Where just on pure physicality, it seems, is how she beat Erin Blanchfield. Like, it helped to be bigger and stronger and more athletic.
Yeah, and you could really see that during the times when Erin Blanchfield actually did get in to try to take her down, and Minot Fureau just kind of whipped her to the side.
Yeah.
Like you would do to a little sister if you were the big sister. Yeah, I thought it was impressive, honestly. I was surprised the extent to which Blanchfield could not counteract it in any way, did not seem ready for it, did not seem ready to deal with it. And, you know, if you're Minot Fureau, why wouldn't you just stand out there at distance and pick somebody apart? That's what's working for you. You know, I think we ask these fighters to sometimes take risks or do things differently in the name of popularity or entertainment for us. That is, again, easy for us to ask for when we're sitting at home watching on TV. If I was her and I was in there and I could just hit someone with a broomstick from 5 feet away and they couldn't hit me back, just do that until the fight's over. Why not?
There were some disturbing trends that I'd see if I were in her corner, or if I were maybe coaching somebody to fight her, that I'd be a little bit excited about. At times where it seemed like when Erin Blanchfield did charge forward and especially managed to make her put her back up against the fence, where you could see her just sort of sticking her chin straight up in the air and her head was a pretty stationary target that you could find if you could get in there. So there is some stuff that you could do there. It also just seemed like, yeah, in some of those moments where you're going, that wasn't necessarily a victory of technique that allowed you to reverse the position there or get out of danger there. It was just that you're bigger and stronger, which,
yeah,
if you could pull it off. I mean, she didn't look spectacular on the scale, so maybe you wonder how long you can continue making that weight and, you know, if that's going to be a problem for you. But she's making it now, and if you can go in there as the bigger fighter, I'm sure that's a benefit. It also seemed like, you know, you dominate this fight, and yet I would describe the noise of the crowd at the final horn as tepid applause. Didn't exactly wow the room, it seemed, with that performance.
Well, this was supposed to be Blanchfield's party, right? Like, she was the favorite. She's from New Jersey. She fights out of New York. This was sort of a hometown crowd for her. We thought, you know, just according to what the odds makers saw, that she was going to win and probably be number one contender. She seems like she's a relatively popular person for the UFC. And so to have Fureau jump out there and pitch the upset here, I think probably silenced the crowd a little bit. And it was not the most exciting thing in the world to watch, I suppose. But, like, I don't know. We think it's cool when Derek Lewis just stands up. So I'm not going to apply a different standard to anyone else. And like I said, she won every round. So I don't know how you deny her number one contender status at this point when she's undefeated in the UFC and everyone she's beat is somebody that we've heard of before, most specifically Rose Namajunas back in September of 2023 prior to this Erin Blanchfield fight. So if she's one of the people that you're trying to keep away from a title shot, I don't necessarily know that you're going to have that easy of a time, especially you know, when she does this to Erin Blanchfield, who's the number two rated women's flyweight, according to the UFC's official rankings. Now, if you are not a person who is all that keen to see Minot Fureau fight for the title, the good news is that we got the champion and the number one contender cooling their heels for a while over there coaching the Ultimate Fighter season 1407. And so nothing will happen until that season wraps up. And I believe, aren't Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko supposed to fight at the next Mexican Independence Day card? Or did I just make that up?
Well, like in like September or something, right? Like, so, yeah.
It's going to be a while. So that's what I'm saying. Fiora's going to have to wait. And you also, I mean, you got a bunch of relatively popular contenders in this weight class. Macy Barber, now Rose Namajunas back getting a win. You know, you like to watch Jessica Andrade fight. And so, you know, there are some other people that are going to be making their cases. But she hasn't lost yet. She keeps beating people that that have name value in this sport. So as long as she keeps doing that, I'm not necessarily sure that that you can keep her away from the title fight.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't seem like it would make a ton of sense.
All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, it was 7:53 p.m. here in the One True Time Zone when I texted you in all caps. You asking all the wrong questions, Mike. Ask me where I'm from. Not getting a reply to that tweet. It was 7 minutes later at 8 p.m. on the dot that I texted you in all caps. Whoop my ass and see what happens. 2 minutes later, I texted you an all caps tweet that says just toot toot. So you could say, I guess, that I was excited to see my boy, the Train, Nate Landwehr, go out there and in many ways pull victory from the jaws of defeat and knock out Jamal Emmers 4 minutes and 43 seconds into the first round. And that fun was just getting started at that point, because you put a live mic in front of the Train and you're going to do some business. Nate Landwehr is pumped up. He's fired up to represent Clarksville, where he's from, and he's just going to holler crazy shit into the microphone until you take it away from him.
Here's what I love about Whoop My Ass and See What Happens, apart from everything about it. It's not only a great MMA quote. This belongs with the great sports quotes along the lines of that bowler with the Who do you think you are? I am, quote. You know that one?
Is that Parker Bone?
Don't ask me any bowler's name. It's that guy, the one guy from the clip where he says, he gets the strike. He says, who do you think you are? I am. This is exactly like that kind of quote, in that I know what you're trying to say. You didn't exactly say it, but you did say it, you know? Whoop my ass and see what happens. Like, normally a normal person would hear it and be like, well, I guess what would happen is that I would have whooped your ass. But no, that's not what he's saying. And you damn well know that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, come in there and beat him up early in a fight. And brother, that's when he's got you right where he wants you.
Yeah.
That's when you have really messed up.
Still lose.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
You're going to go out there and stun Nate the Train in the opening minute of the fight, open up these cuts, get blood flowing. You probably are just ignorant enough to step back and go, this is going great for me. I'm whooping this guy's ass. But now you're about to see what happens when you whoop his ass. I love it. I love absolutely everything about it.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's like I said at the top of the show, it's fun to watch Nate Landwehr do his thing. He has been at complete weirds mobile since the moment he arrived in this company. He continues to be it. I saw some Diaz brothers comparisons thrown around over the weekend, and I thought that's probably not too far from what he's actually doing out there. And it's like I said at the top of the show, man, the sport needs this. The sport right now, with the state that it's in and the general run of play in the UFC, needs crazy motherfuckers to show up and do awesome shit and then scream about it. Because that's one of the things that we find fun, and you need to have all the fun you can right now in this sport.
Yeah, you do. The thing to me, I really like realizing that This is not just Nate Landwehr on fight night. This is how this man is going through life.
Yeah.
He's like this all the time because he shows up on the MMA Fortnite this week. He's sitting there, you know, it seems like chilling on his couch with a big ass black eye, and you can see the bruises from the cuts and stuff on his face. He's talking to Ariel Helwani, and you know, he's explaining why he wouldn't advise people to go into MMA. And honestly, his reasoning is sound, and I totally get what he's saying here, where he's like, if somebody asked me about like becoming a professional fighter, I'd tell him no, don't do it. With the reasoning that if me saying no, don't do it convinces you not to do it, then you definitely shouldn't have done it because it was not going to be great for you because it's a hard road to walk. And if me just saying you shouldn't is going to talk you out of it, if you're that easily discouraged, then you are going to get discouraged down the road there pretty quickly anyway. So I agree with him there. But then when he's talking about how difficult a life it is to be a pro fighter, he says, quote, "This fight shit is like falling in love with the neighborhood hoe. She ain't ever going to love you." This is just him on a Monday, just like at home, chilling. And just, that's not a guy who's putting on a character when it comes time to fight. That's a guy whose character you are finding out about when it is time to fight. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Also, I encourage you to continue your plan, Chad, of learning nothing about his social or political views.
You know what's funny is that when you say that on social media, people take that as a cue to tell you. Which I know that. I know when I post that that's what's going to happen. But apparently, Nate Landwehr is maybe not the guy you would assume that he is. Just from what we perhaps have learned about other fighters in a similar mold over the years. That's all I'll say.
I would like to believe that Nate Landwehr just might as well live in an alternate universe, that he is not even aware of anything political at all happening at any time.
Maybe it's a world where it's just him and Peyton Talbot, right? Sometimes they see each other like wolves loping along the horizon, might look across the valley and see each other in the moonlight, but they don't have any contact. They're just out there doing their thing.
I also love the line where Michael Bisping comes in there and tries to do that normal, you know, tell us about your performance kind of thing, and him telling him right off the bat that you're asking me the wrong questions. Ask me where I'm from. Why would he do that? We already said it. Like Bruce Buffer said it in the intro. Like everybody knows, I think, at this point. But like the Diaz brothers, you will know them by their insistence on telling you of their origins, you know? Yeah. The Diaz brothers made the 209 area code arguably the most well-known area code in MMA. And when's the last time you thought about Clarksville, Tennessee without Nate Landwehr? You know, he's bringing awareness. You could say that.
Yes, he is. He is bringing awareness. All right. Well, he's not going to win them all, but he's fun. So we're glad that he's here. Ben Foulkes, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we'll get out of here for this week. What is your Just Saying Stuff?
Well, Chad, did you see Callan Loughran go up there and call out Raul Rosas Jr. With his mic time afterwards? And he's, you know, Loughran's 27. Mm-hmm. And so he admitted afterwards that he had a little bit of mixed feelings about how you're going to go out there and call out, especially, I believe he referred to him referred to Raul Rosas Jr. as Dick Lips, which that ain't cool, man.
Yeah,
that's not a cool thing to do. But then he goes on there to explain it where he says, "I feel like a dickhead calling out a 19-year-old lad, but we're in the same position, same record. Let's do it." Then goes on to say, you know, that the UFC is going to have this big pay-per-view in Manchester, supposedly. We could do it there. We could do it on the undercard. This is what a dreamer he is. He says, we could do it on the undercard of Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler. Yeah, sure. That one that's totally happening. Or we can go to the Sphere on Mexican Independence Day and have 15 fucking million Mexicans boo me. I don't give a fuck. We've got the same record now. I'm in no position to be calling out Sean O'Malley or calling out Marab, but that's a realistic fight. And then asked how it'll go. I think I'll punch his fucking head. He's dangerous, but stupid. Let's go, Rosas. Let's go. I love a conflicted call out, you know, like where like you're not even sure this is the right thing to do. You feel like it makes a certain amount of sense. You know, how will it go? I think I'll punch his head. I think at some point in the fight, I'll probably punch his head. He'll probably punch my head. And like just being like, I got to be realistic. I'm in no position to call out these other guys. How about this guy? He's 19. I feel weird about that. But shit, I guess so. I'm just saying, there's something about the inner turmoil of this kind of a call out that I really appreciate.
Just saying. Well, I've been thinking a lot about retirement recently, Ben, just because we thought this might be the last one for Chris Weidman going out there over the weekend. We've seen Henry Cejudo recently tease us with a possible retirement and then decide at the last minute that he's not going to do it. You got Jose Aldo coming out of retirement because he desperately wants to finish out his contract, so he's taking fights that don't even make sense. You even got Uriah Faber having a combat jiu-jitsu match at a California show coming up here in a week or two. And I came to a realization. We can't do it. We just can't do it in this sport. We can't do retirement. We just can't. We fuck it up every time we try. We're with Chris Weidman, we're finding new ways to fuck it up over the weekend. So I came to a decision. New rule. You can't retire from MMA. It's like the mafia.
Okay.
It's like getting into a 1% outlaw motorcycle gang. Once you're in until you die. This is the Conor McGregor style system. Till they put you in a box and lower you into the ground. No more retirements. You can't do it. You're not allowed. You just got to keep fighting until the end. Till your dying breath, you got to keep fighting. Because we can't do retirement. It doesn't work. We've tried it and it doesn't work. So we're just going to go no retirements from here on out.
What if people don't want to do it anymore, though?
Too bad.
Oh, no. Bad.
Yeah. No, got to do it. Got to keep doing it till the end. No more retirements. Just saying.
Man, I feel like you and Dana White might have finally found something to agree on. And I don't know if that's great for you.
Well, it's too bad. They shouldn't have got into it. They shouldn't have signed the contract if they didn't, want to fight till their dying breath. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be over on the Patreon page all week. Jump over there and have some fun with us, patreon.com/co-main-event. As for right now, though, we're done. We're through. We're out. That's it. I guess we're not even going to say anything. No banter on the way out. No, I don't. So I was waiting for you to do the banter, and then it didn't happen. So
just waiting for you. Time. I was waiting for you to do the banter.
I thought you might come with some banter.
Just I was kind of listening to see if I could hear the woodpecker.
He haven't heard him thumping away out there since I put the tin foil out there. So it's possible that maybe that's working. I don't know. I got to go out and check it. Otherwise, we'll get the kids from the bus.